the educational incentives in the world aren't going to help them if they don't have enough food on the table, Lady Heflin said. I recall being hungry once. I didn't much care for it, and I can't say it helped me in my studies either.
Point taken.
Pyvik broke a little circular pastry in half.
So how do we get the food to the kids in the cities more cheaply without dropping the price on farming goods and effectively starving all the children in the country?
He reached out and offered her half of the pastry, holding his hand about halfway across the table. Lady Heflin reached out and took the piece, bearing one arm in the process. No band.
Tax breaks for transportation. The guilds buy at the same price, it's a little less expensive to ship it, and they agree to a lower price bump in the cities as a result.
Will the guilds accept that?
Master Trendon asked sceptically. He'd scratched his arms an hour or so ago, and Pyvik had been able to rule him out as well.
Let me have a word with them, Lady Heflin said. I can make it work.
What's this here?
Pyvik asked, pointing at one paper near the bottom of the pile on the table.
I think I missed this when I came in late. The Republic Festival of Excellence.
Savart chuckled.
Consider the name a placeholder for now. I'll be rolling it out in the next few weeks. We've had some generous donations from private parties who want to celebrate the Republic's achievements, and rather than put such donations to defence spending, like we usually do, I thought it was time to give the people something to cheer about.
So that's going to shame the Empire on their visit, Lady Heflin said, laughing.
He's having the mine at Sunrise Canyon converted to a festival ground to showcase the magical wonders of the Republic, specifically what the Paladins can do with these new bands.
Pyvik
smiled delightedly.
That's wonderful.
Savart shrugged.
It's expensive, but a little culture now might stop a lot of blood later. I've got reports on my desk about accidents at Sunrise Canyon's processing center, Pyvik said. I was going to discuss them with you when these were...
Something beeped, and Savart pushed back his sleeve to reveal the Paladin band on his arm.
Hold that thought, Pyvik. My lunchtime appointment.
He stood and gestured.
Everyone, please meet Mr. Skinner, Lively, and Slant.
The three blonde men who came in all wore Paladin bands, just like Savart. They greeted the room, all perfect teeth and firm handshakes.
Happy to be here, happy to be here, said Mr. Slant. And I have to say, on behalf of the puppeteers, we are really looking forward to covering the Republic Festival of Excellence. Fantastic way to move things forward, and we've got some great ideas that we think will really draw people in. We took the liberty of speaking with Jostakar Dorenki, Mr. Skinner added, and we're not too worried about any of these fairy creatures causing trouble at the event. Still, at your request, Archvoyant, I'll be coordinating security efforts personally.
Wonderful,
Savart said, nodding to Pyvik.
One less thing for the Jostakars to worry about.
Pyvik smiled.
I'm always happy for a little help. I'm still a little concerned about what happened at Sunrise Canyon, however, from a technical standpoint. I am coordinating with the Lapid Temporum,
Mr. Lively said, matching Pyvik's smile.
And I can assure you that we are absolutely on top of the situation. This should be smooth sailing for everyone.
Locke asked Derry for a good room to relax and talk in, and Derry took them to a spacious room with a suf-ka-suf table, a long bar, and a lot of low couches and elevated stools placed around high tables. Kale passed Locke her customary glass of red wine as she pulled up a stool by the bar, and she looked at it dubiously.
I thought you couldn't get a good red in the Elflands.
Didn't say it was good, Captain.
He poured Desidora a white, then turned to Derry.
What do you take these days, kid?
Milk is still fine, Mr. Kale.
Derry smiled. It didn't reach his eyes.
We'll find out who did this, Kale added,
and after a moment passed Derry a tall glass.
Thank you.
Derry held the glass but didn't sip.
He's not dead. I would know if he were dead.
You're right, Desidora said, taking a graceful sip of her wine and reclining on one of the low couches as though posing for a picture.
We believe we understand how the attack happened, and while we don't know who it was, we know that the attack didn't immediately kill him. There's every reason to believe that he's still alive.
Then we get him back,
Derry said. He was pacing, leaving little splashes of milk on the carpet behind him as a glass sloshed in his hands.
We get him back and set him free, and he's all right.
Desidora took his hand as he passed her, and he stopped, lowered his head, and shut his eyes.
I would know if he were dead.
Sadly, the rest of the Elflands lacks faith in your feelings, came a voice from the hallway,
and Locke turned to see Irithella Fleolon come in. His face was pale, the crystals in his cheeks a little duller than usual.
The dragon protected the Elflands. With him gone, there will be chaos.
I thought you had an army, Kael said. Was the dragon like your archbuoyant or your emperor, or...
No, said Derry. He put his glass down and started to pace again.
He didn't rule the elves. Elves don't want to be ruled, Mr. Kael. They were slaves, and when they get near the crystals, something in their heads makes them almost slaves again. They hate that more than anything.
Imagine an army where no one can give orders, Irithelath Leolon said quietly. Imagine a warship where the captain has to phrase everything as a suggestion. We are not a military force. We never could be. The dragon gave guidance we respected without ever asking to rule us, and protected us when we lacked the ability to protect ourselves. Now he is dead.
I do not like it when you say that, Mr. Irithelath Leolon, Derry said with slow deliberation. And I do not think you are right.
You're not an elf, boy. Just tell me not to say that and be done.
Irithelath Leolon shook his head.
With him gone, at least, the Elflands will withdraw. We cannot fight the ancients, not when the very presence of the ancients enslaves us. We will use magic to hide ourselves away, and hope that the ancients consider us too much trouble to hunt down. The fairy creatures will do much the same.
Well, thanks, Ethel, that was very uplifting.
Kael held out a wine glass.
You are clearly handling this planning session without the benefit of alcohol. Only Icy and the kid and maybe Ulenia can handle that kind of stress.
Irithelath Leolon snatched the wine glass and took an angry drink.
I will see what other news I can gather. The dragon had sources. Many remain useful.
He stalked off, glass in hand.
Where is Ululenia, anyway? Tern asked,
stirring the liquid in her cocktail glass with a small decorative sword.
Here! Hello!
Ululenia dashed into the room, her ash-blonde hair askew and her sandals held in one hand.
Sorry I'm late, as the mother bear wakes from her winter slumber.
Uh-huh.
Kael raised a glass her way.
Dress is on backward.
It is not.
Ululenia looked down at the clingy white gown she wore, then back up at Kael, and then blushed and took the glass.
It was not.
How does that work? Derry asked. I mean, you're a unicorn and you change shapes. Isn't the dress part of you?
Ululenia fixed him with a sultry stare.
Any time you want to find out, you let me know.
Derry smiled and shook his head. The smile still didn't reach his eyes.
The ancients, Locke said, waving for silence. We know where they came from. We know that hoop Desidora saw is the gateway that lets them in. How do we take it down?
Death magic did nothing, Desidora said,
glaring at the memory as her hair darkened slightly.
We're looking through the dragon's library, Hessler said, and his organization is actually incredibly intuitive, which is unexpected both generally for a private library and specifically for a fairy creature, as their minds don't.
Tern elbowed him.
We haven't found anything yet, though. Would killing me stop them? Derry asked.
No, Locke said without pausing.
They used me to open the gate, he insisted. I was the key to bringing them back. The prophecy was all for them. That's even why Hunter Mirka wanted me dead, back when he found out what I was on Heaven's Spire.
He's right, Hessler said,
and as Tern elbowed him again, added,
Not about killing himself, about why the golem was so insistent upon killing him. In the dragon's notes on the end of the war between the ancients and the glimmering folk, he guessed that there were multiple factions arguing over the proper way to close the gateway to both the land of the ancients and the land of the glimmering folk. The ancients knew that closing both gates would seal them away and leave the gate of the glimmering folk fractionally open.
High points, baby, Tern murmured.
Some of the ancients believed in the prophecy, Hessler said. Trusting that Derry would defeat the remaining power of the Glimmering Folk, and then their gate could be opened safely. The others simply believed that Derry should be killed if found, which had a reasonable chance of opening the Ancients' Gate without reopening the gate of the Glimmering Folk as well.
Kale set his tankard down.
All I really got there was that the Ancients disagreed with each other, which is the first good news we've had all day.
I am unclear on how that is good news, Icy said.
Means they're not a group mind, all totally loyal to each other, Tern said.
They have politics and short-sightedness, just like we do, Kale said. It's a point we can hit.
Ah, disharmonizing influence,
Icy asked, and raised his teacup to Kale in a salute.
That helps, Locke said, but it doesn't give us the gate. Hessler, can you and Desidora keep on the Dragon's Library?
We need to do more, Derry said,
and Locke looked over. His face was drawn tight, but he met her stare without trying to hide his pain.
Mr. Dragon only figured out the part with me near the end. If he knew about the gate earlier, he would have done something. He would have stopped it. If there's anything that will help us, it won't be here.
No holy text I've ever seen referenced a gate like that, Desidora said.
Hessler frowned.
The closest I've seen to what you describe would be a specific type of demon summoning at the university, but I don't think it relates. Speaking of which, I need to repair your warding charm.
Later. Locke waved him away. Ulilenia, Icy. They both shook their heads. No lore from the fairy creatures, nothing from the Empire. Someone must know something.
Westyke knew about it, Kale offered, and Locke nodded.
All right. He's probably still at Sunrise Canyon. His estate isn't likely to be guarded as closely as the mine. Locke nodded slowly. That's a start.
Speaking of the mine, Desidora said, how do we get back inside? They nearly caught us last time.
Death Lady's got a point, Tern said. Icy and I had a rule about hitting the same place twice, which was don't. The mine has limited entrances and guards all over the place. Probably more of them now that the Ancients are, you know, there. Add to that, this team's big strength is magic, and we can't use any of that inside the mine without causing a giant explosion.
You did not seem to mind causing a giant explosion in our previous encounter, Icy said mildly.
You know, when you have evil monster bounty hunters coming at you, you are welcome to come up with a better plan.
Not all magic, Locke cut in. Desidora, how did you say Gil's power left, and how did the golems come after you?
A transport rune, as far as I can.
Desidora paused.
A transport rune.
Which worked despite being magic and didn't cause a giant explosion, Locke pointed out.
Desidora nodded.
The Ancients must have attuned to a frequency that does not react with the ambient magic.
That's how we get in.
Locke looked at Tern.
Would the records be at the Lapitemporum on Heaven's Spire, or can we get them someplace groundside?
The office at Heaven's Spire only handles crystal-based magic related to the spire itself. Sunrise Canyon is kind of in the middle of nowhere, not close to any of the port cities, but...
Tern thought.
Got it, yes. My old hometown, actually. Roslenesef. Anything tied to old magic and not in one of the port cities itself would be handled there.
So we have Westyke's estate, Locke said. And we have your hometown's Lapitemporum.
And you have a problem,
Irithella Theolon said from the doorway. He walked in carrying what looked like a wide scroll.
Ethel, you're doing it again, said Kale. Do you need another drink?
Desperately, as will you.
Irithella Theolon unrolled the scroll, which turned out to be some version of the magical leaves the elves had cultivated. When it was stretched taut, images began to flicker on its surface, and Locke heard the sound of laughter.
The only other real news today is the Paladin bans, which have taken the Republic by storm, said the dragon puppet.
Oh, hooray!
Kale took a drink.
I didn't think you got the puppet shows out here. Now, I know they're the latest new thing,
the manticore said grumpily, swishing his scorpion tail.
But I, for one, can't get used to having a calendar and a notepad and a message crystal all on one hand.
Does that seem strange to anyone else?
I'll tell you one thing, said the Gryphon. Now that I'm a paladin, I actually remembered my anniversary this year.
The dragon laughed.
And I imagine your wife doesn't mind you having more energy than before, either.
She sure doesn't, the Gryphon chortled.
Does anyone else sort of want to vomit?
Tern asked. Kale quietly raised a hand.
Now, I expected you to be up in arms about these paladins, the manticore said. No pun intended. The bans cost so damn much. Isn't making rich people into paladins giving them even more benefits over the poor?
Well, I don't think that's fair, the Gryphon said, looking a little hurt. And they're easier to get than you'd think. Some have been granted to government officials, and anyone who's willing to work can eventually save up for one. Best of all, though, Archvoyant Savert said that at the Republic Festival of Excellence, in addition to demonstrations by paladins, ordinary citizens will have the chance to compete in fields like athletics, scholarship, magical aptitude, and artistry for a chance to win a paladin band of their very own.
Then Kordar's hell, Desidora muttered. Kale squinted.
Okay, no. It's weird when you say it, Diz.
As the puppets went about their banter, Locke turned to Irithella Theolon, who smiled grimly.
Thanks, she said. At least we know what they're planning now.
If you will be patient, there's one more bit I didn't understand.
The elf raised a finger.
And finally, the dragon said, one bit of humour to send you on your way, people.
It seems that an Urujar woman down near the Imperial border has been dodging her taxes, the manticore said.
See, you say an Urujar woman like it matters what race she is, the Gryphon said peevishly.
She hasn't paid taxes since before the war, the manticore went on, cheating and stealing and generally being a terrible person. And you'll never believe what this woman did. She went into a Republic tax office to complain that her tax refund wasn't large enough. Can you believe her?
The Gryphon laughed.
Well, that is a bad way to go about stealing the Republic's money.
Everyone say hello to Tressa de Quail, the dragon said. Our first idiot criminal of the week.
A small screen, especially grainy given that Locke was watching it on a leaf, rose up behind the stage where the puppets played. For a moment it was blank, and then it lit up with a glamour that showed the face of a middle-aged Urujar woman. She had a heavy build, and her hair was pulled back tight. Her eyes were red with tears.
I didn't do anything, she said angrily. You say whatever you like. I didn't do anything.
Well, you're not doing anything anymore, Tressa, the manticore said,
and the Gryphon and the dragon laughed along with it.
Since you like taking things for free, enjoy a free flight from Rossoniki up to Heaven's Spire, and then a free stay at the cleaners.
Remember, everyone, the dragon called out. It's your republic.
Stay informed, the crowd yelled back,
and Irithella Theolon folded the leaf back up.
So they hit the paladin bands, Tern said, stirring her drink again. I get that, but what was that bit at the end?
There was a tiny metallic clink over at the bar. Locke looked over and saw Kale holding the handle of his tankard in one hand. The tankard itself sat at the bar, half crushed.
That, said Kale, was my mother.